Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Tuesday, May 2nd, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy National Teacher Appreciation Day.
Oh, okay. I guess it depends on which schools.
There you go.
And what they're teaching. Teachers aren't the same as what they were when we went to school. So if you got a good one out there, then absolutely appreciate them. Yes. I guess we should appreciate gold today. And you know, it's funny. It cracks me up. Yesterday, you know, we talked about the bank, we talked about Republic, and we talked about, you know, what happened over the weekend and so forth. The markets were quiet, nobody reacted. And I thought it was really kind of strange and so forth that there was basically no reaction at all. And then it was like today, it's like, oh, guess what happened? And all
delayed
of a sudden,
reaction.
I mean, it's like, are you kidding me? And, you know, all the big headlines and everything, you know, oh, no, second biggest in history and, you know, all this and that. And it's like, well, yeah, that's what we've been talking about for the past couple of days. And it's like, hello, catch up, would you please? So we even had a response from gold today. It was up $35. And it's off the low, off the high, I should say. We had a high of 2020. Right now, we're at 2018 in the New York spot price aftermarket. Silver up 42 cents, $25.47. Gold actually outperformed silver today, ladies and gentlemen. Platinum up 15 at $1,075. Palladium was down 19, $1,509. The USDX today was down 0.21 at 101.90, so it's not like it fell out of bed, but we'll see what happens once it breaks 100, because I think that's going to be a, you know, a tipping point there. Crude oil was down $4. Get that, $4. 71.58. I hadn't paid much attention to crude oil until just now. Throughout the day. So big, big drop there. Paper markets today, we all know they were down over 500 points. They brought them back to down 360, 370. So the plunge protection team was out there working hard today, 33,684. S&P down 48 points, 4,119. And the NASDAQ was down 132, 12,080. So the biggest percentage of the day loss was the S&P, but not by much. They were all down a little over 1%. See, I have luck in the euro. The euro was, European markets were down all basically about 1.25%. France was down a little bit more than that, closer to 1.5%. Asian markets were higher, though. So, go figure. They're probably happy that the U.S. banks are failing. So they can come and get more of a grip on us. That, you know, that probably helps them a little bit more. Let's see here. Although we all are all connected as far as the paper markets go, so they might have had a day of, you know, but we'll see what happens going forward. 10-year yield was lower. That's at 3.426%. Natural gas had been a blower, yeah, also by 4.25%, 2.219. So, yeah, I really didn't see much in the news on the oil prices, you know, because I always check the headlines and I check my articles, I read my articles, I update on the news and so forth throughout the day, but not a lot of commentary on the big drop in oil. So, but I think, I don't know if we have this day today, but the biggest 20% plunge in a pair of banks, that's big news, 20%. I'm not sure if that was still on the PacWest Bancorp, Dave, and Western Alliance Bancorp. So both shares were down at least 20%. So, yeah. We haven't seen the last of the bank failures, ladies and gentlemen.
It ain't over yet.
It isn't over yet, you know. And, you know, everybody's focusing on the FOMC, you know, whether will they or won't they. And again, you know, they're looking at 25 basis points. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what would happen if they don't raise it based on these bank failures. I don't know. I don't know if they'll hold off, or if they hold off, it'll seem that the problems are bigger than what they're admitting. And of course, we know that the problems are bigger than what they're admitting, but the, you know, the general populace out there believes them. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But it's pretty much in consensus that they'll at least do a 25 basis point, Dave.
Indeed. I think the die is cast. I think as much as some of the FOMC members will ask their colleagues, well, should we consider pausing right now instead of waiting until June? I think there'll be plenty that say, nah, We understand and respect your question, dear colleague, but we got to keep fighting the big bug. I think it's an obsession that just won't go away just yet. So I agree with you. 25 basis points tomorrow. I'd be shocked if they... let it alone right now.
Yeah, they'll probably do what everybody's expecting because they're not going to do anything to really cause any alarm anywhere. So they'll do what is everyone is expecting because that would be the road of least resist. You know, that would be everybody's expecting it. So nobody's going to be shocked at anything that they do and so forth. So that will help keep calm in the markets, I would suggest, I would think. So they will do that. And again, they have old Janet Yellen coming out here warning that now government's going to run out of money as early as June 1st. And I guess they're going to be meeting on the 9th. Old McCarthy is going to the White House to talk things over. And, and you know, trust me, they're not gonna default. You know, something's gonna have to push them over the edge for them to default. So this is just, you know, I don't know if you want to call it their dog and pony shows, but you know, and it comes out again that you know the Treasury could mint a high value platinum coin. I mean, why does that always come out? It's the most ridiculous, but that's what you'll hear. That's what you'll hear everybody talking about. They can do this. You actually hear that all in mainstream media that they're going to do this, mint $1 million, you know.
$1 trillion.
Can you even, well, it used to be million. Now it's a trillion. Yeah. We went from million to billion to trillion. I mean, can you even imagine what that would do to the markets?
Well, we'd be a laughing stock.
I mean, it's not going to happen. Not going to happen. It's kind of like your Iraqi dinars. It isn't going to happen. You know, I guess you can always say possible, but not probable would be the, you know, but yeah, I mean, and I've been hearing that for how many years? 20? 20, 30? That they were going to do this. So, but our debt just keeps on growing and growing and growing. And I actually saw something going around, you know, about, you know, Trump having the biggest, spending the most money out of the last how many presidents and so forth, you know, and so forth. But I'll tell you what, though, when it spiked in 2020. But I'll guarantee you, everybody wanted a check at that point in time. Everybody appreciated their $1,200 checks and their $600 checks and their rent pays on hold and, you know, more food stamps and all of this because of the pandemic. You know, nobody who turned it away. It was all accepted and needed, and everybody approved it. But now it looks back like it was, oh, he spent more money. Well, let's look back. But we do know tax cuts do create more debt. We know that from the Reagan administration. So, you know, it's just the same old baloney. Let's see. Government officials, including Yellen, have repeatedly dismissed the idea as a gimmick. And, of course, we're, you know, still talking about that. So I'm not quite sure if this is still all about the...
Oh, yeah. No, the Section 4, the 14th Amendment.
Yeah.
The validity. No, that's something... Yeah, that's something that people think, well, if it comes to the... You know, it's 1159... all the rating agencies are talking about another downgrade, and there's really serious belief that there's not going to be a deal. And we're seeing markets start to go even more wacko. That's when they say, well, the president could invoke this section of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. That says the validity of the public debt of the United States shall not be questioned with the interpretation of that said to mean that, well, we can't let, the president can't let the nation default, that it, because the Treasury Department falls under his command, he can do whatever he needs to do. So there's a, you know, a thought that, well, he'll order Yellen. To make sure that there's cash to pay off. Do what they have to do to keep the bills current.
How about closing down a lot of the government offices? That would work first. That's what they usually do. You know, there's a lot of offices that don't need to get paid and so forth. And how about stopping the politicians' paychecks? You know, that'd work. And there's a lot of things they can do. But, yeah, it would, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if they did that, that's the same thing as defaulting on the debt.
Well, it is.
You know, so.
It would be.
Yeah. And I don't know if there's any circumstances attached to that, like, you know, war or, you know, certain circumstances and, And because the thing of it is, they should never, ever kept increasing the debt limit to begin with. So,
I don't believe there are those types of conditions. But the procedurally, it's real difficult to do.
Yeah, ain't going to happen.
There's this discharge petition. There's timing issues. Essentially, only 2 days before the June 1st, run out of the money that's left. 2 days for Congress to do anything, because it can only be done on the second or fourth Monday of the month when the chamber is in session. So it's highly dubious.
And not only that, even Yellen said that it wouldn't spike rates. 20% would be nothing. You know, I can only imagine where rates would go, interest rates would go. So.
Yeah. This other scenario you don't see that often, certainly hasn't been talked a lot on mainstream media, is this scenario where the Treasury could sell bonds at a higher interest rate than what they are under current market conditions. To use an example of, they could sell $35 billion worth of Treasuries at, say, 5%. Rather than the current rate of 3.5, and thus could earn $38 billion and use the proceeds to retire more of its debt and give the government more space to operate under the existing debt limit. But then again, the Treasury's on the hook for those higher interest payments, and would certainly have an impact on that market.
And creating debt to pay the debt.
Yeah.
Right? They'd be creating more debt to pay the debt. Is that robbing Peter to pay Paul or something? That's not even that. It's like using your credit card. It's like using your credit card to pay off the debt.
Or they could just abolish the debt ceiling altogether.
No.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, that wouldn't work. That wouldn't work. Hey, I mean, that's what they do, though. If something doesn't work and it doesn't fit their guidelines, let's just change it. Instead of being held accountable for anything in this world anymore, let's just change it. So let's not really look at the real problem of our government and the amount of money that's being just blown away.
Yeah, well, that's sort of the philosophy of these modern monetary theorists, isn't it? They're in line with that, that it doesn't matter what the debt is, because we can always create money to pay it off.
And there's always taxpayers out there to stupidly pay it.
Yeah, well, not fully appreciating that more money means more what? Inflation. So you get what you pay for. Or don't, in this case.
Well, the whole situation.
Limbo.
Yeah.
That's where we are.
Yeah, I mean,
perpetual,
and it's just...
state of limbo.
Yeah, and I mean, but again, everybody's talking about the debt ceiling. Everybody's talking about you need to do this, you need to do that. You hear all these mouthpieces on mainstream media say this, do that, but yet, how many do you hear about cutting or stopping? There's so many we can look at the borders, look at the increase of that amount of money that's being spent. I mean, so again, we're back to accountability, because they know there's nothing that they can do. They can't fix anything because the system implodes. And that's the problem. So you're just going to keep addressing it and spending more money and doing it and plugging up, band-aiding it, and too big to fail, bail everybody out until it just collapses. And the only ones that truly really get hurt are the people of this country, the taxpayers, and everybody else. I mean, it's, but yet nobody realizes it. It's that they're that desperate and things are that bad. But maybe they can keep it going for another 5 years, 10 years. Who knows? But one thing that we can't keep going is this ignoring first this segment. Break. Yeah, this first segment. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And it's been a hectic day. And again, for those of you who joined us late, we have gold up 34 bucks at 2018. Silver was up 20, almost 25.50. Both are off their highs of the day, so a very good day in the precious metals, and even platinum did good today, up 1.3%. So still haven't found anything on oil, but we'll keep looking for it. And, you know, before we head on, we're going to talk a little more about the banks and briefly home prices. After cooling for a better part of last year, they seem to be rising again. Of course, you know, heading into the season, there was a sharp drop in new listings, adding to an already meager supply of homes for the sale. So we're looking at a renewed bidding wars, and more homes are selling for above asking price. You wonder why. Home prices rose a seasonally adjusted almost 0.5% in March from February. After revisions to January and February reads, this is now the third consecutive month of price increases. Would they increase based on inflation? Is that the reason why they're going up? Roughly 30% fewer new listings came on the market in March compared with pre-pandemic norm, so less new listings. Let's see. We saw about 5 months ago, prices were declining on a seasonally adjusted month-over-month basis in 92% of all major U.S. markets. Fast forward to March, and the situation has done a literal 180, with prices now rising in 92% of the markets. So I don't know what would, I can't figure out if it's just heading into the market. We actually did have, depends on where you were at. We were warmer than usual for the winter. So, but this says 92% of the major markets. So that would even be in the cold areas, wouldn't you say, Dave? Or
well, we know that out west, where particularly the big markets were the most expensive, are now well off their peaks, while 40% of other major markets elsewhere have seen prices return to their peak levels. Of the nation's 50 largest markets by population, just Austin, Texas, Salt Lake City, Utah, and San Antonio, Texas are seeing prices fall month to month. Prices in Phoenix and Dallas are relatively flat. 45 others, different. Well, so yeah, that that's a big spread regionally. We know the average rate on the 30-year fixed mortgage has been bouncing around between 6 and 7% the last several months, compared to the early in the pandemic when it was around just 3%. So it makes you wonder if buyers anyway are getting used to the new higher rate environment with these sales strengthening now the past couple of months. A report out today, Melody, from CoreLogic shows prices also gaining month to month. Prices in March about 3% higher than last year nationally. But again, markets in the Sun Belt apparently far outpacing cities in the West and Northeast, with prices in Miami up 15%.
I don't blame them going south instead of north. But anyway, you know, we were going to talk. I don't think rates went down that much. In fact, they were kind of climbing there for a while here in the last, I think, month or so. But anyway, we'll have to see if they can hold that, or, you know, we'll have to start talking to more a little bit about the commercial real estate. Those loans are, you know, the topic of conversation as far as having major impacts now in the financial markets. And, you know, we, as I mentioned in the beginning of the program, we talked yesterday about First Republic Bank being purchased by JP Morgan. And we saw regional bank shares continue to sell off, with the S&P Regional Banking Index down about 3.4%. The KBW Banking Index, another closely watched bank index, was off by 1.8%. Larger regional banks such as Citizens Financial and PNC, they were, both of which were in the hunt to buy First Republic, they fell more than 6%. Now they're saying, suggesting some, you know, investor disappointment, but that's a lot of disappointment. So maybe there's something else going on, thinking that maybe they weren't able to step up to the pump and maybe they didn't have what was needed or the security, and as J.P. Morgan did. But, you know, J.P. Morgan got a deal, you know. I mean, it's the same creepy crooks that get the deals.
Literally.
I know.
Literally. But as you know, you mentioned L.A.'s PacWest Bank tumbled by 11%, Seattle-based Home Street down 18%. You got New Jersey's Valley National that they tumbled 20%, worst daily drop ever. Clearly, this thing isn't over, despite how particularly Congress and the Fed, would want us to believe. One of the Fed's implicit goals and its dual mandate is stability in the nation's financial system. Well, banks equal money, and if the banking industry is unstable, it sure ain't going to be keeping that promise to the American public. And, you know, it's not just the investors. I mean, it's certainly the depositors. And who are most of the depositors? By just numbers, obviously, by sheer numbers, it's everyday Americans like you and me. Although we certainly know that by amount of deposits, you know, you've got the upper crust who are responsible for a lot of the uninsured deposits in these banks. Now, I'll be talking more about First Republic in particular, some of the shenanigans in the third segment today. Now, I don't know if you want to talk now about, you know, in the wake of this, the FDIC recommendations for reforming, quote, reforming deposit insurance.
They have to reform it because what they've got is not going to cover what's going to happen. That's pretty simple to believe. And from my understanding, which I'm not sure I get, you know, they talk about the amount of bank deposits that aren't covered by the FDIC and how that has grown rapidly and is now higher than at any point since 1949. The fast rise in uninsured bank deposits with balances of more than $250,000 poses a systemic risk to the financial system because it increases the risk of bank runs. All three of the bank failures in the U.S. this year happened at financial institutions with a large percentage of uninsured deposits. But government did, well, the taxpayers did cover that.
Well,
from what I hear, that
let's
they
be careful about that. I'm not so sure that we can say that at this point, because, I mean, we're being told that there aren't any taxpayer dollars involved in these bailouts.
However,
I see where I think I see where you're going with that, and that's, I think it's an important statement, but I'm not sure if to date. You know, they're in our pocketbooks yet.
Well, I'm sure they'll have scenarios in how these uninsured deposits are covered. But it's probably, again, a little bit of robbing Peter to pay Paul. Because it always falls back on us. Well, I don't know where else they get the money.
From the banks.
Okay. All right.
From the banks themselves.
And look how many times we bail out these banks. Look at the fees are increased and, you know, and all this and all that. So ultimately, it hits us somehow, some way, perhaps maybe not 100%, but somehow we get affected by it. But they're saying that not all these was not that they were covered. I don't know how much they're talking about. Uninsured domestic deposits increased at a rate of almost 10% a year to $7.7 trillion. And that's from 2009 to the end of 2022. Even at their peak in 2021, 47% of domestic deposits were uninsured.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And they were just held in a few large banks.
Yeah. 1%. Of asset by asset size held 77% of these uninsured deposits. Their report offers three suggestions, even though the FDIC report itself didn't explicitly say that the deposit insurance system needs an overhaul. Yes, there was a suggestion that, you know, if financial stability is in fact the goal, then something needs to change. And I suppose they want it to be done by themselves, so they can sort of control the potential damage, and hope that Congress doesn't get involved and force additional changes, a la Dodd-Frank amendments down their throat. But I don't know where this ends up. You know, we talk about lifting the deposit limit altogether. Talk about lack of accountability. But it recommends that that targeted business bank accounts that are insured, even if they're over the limit. So not lifting the deposit limit per se, but I guess create a new category of deposits that would be insured even if they're over the limit. I mean, I'm not quite sure what the difference is, other than it gives priority to businesses over consumers. So it's interesting. What happens if you inherit or win the lottery and you park $1 million at your bank, intending for it just to be there for maybe 6 months till you figure out what you're going to do with it, and all of a sudden that bank, or not all of a sudden, but say that bank, unbeknownst to you, that bank has some serious issues, and they fail. Poor little Paul, who has been, as you say, robbed to pay Peter, is you know what, out of luck. So I don't know. It all comes back to the rich get richer and the poor just watch.
Well, you know, the thing of it is, I mean, have we gotten to the point where, I mean, our money is so worthless that when you think of what you need to retire is $1 million and $2 million, I mean, these are numbers that are thrown around that people need in order to just retire.
I know.
And it's like, but the, you know, what a great way to move that cash out of these banks. And I'm assuming that they're talking about cash on these deposits.
Yeah.
What a great way to move that cash into the paper markets and, you know, other places to, you know, well, your money can't be safe in the bank, so there's no point sitting in cash at the bank, so you better get it out of there and, you know, and invest it somewhere. I wouldn't be investing in anywhere but gold at this point in time. Are you kidding me? That's my personal opinion. But I mean, when you're talking about $7.7 trillion,
yeah,
just think about if that was wiped out,
mm-hmm.
even half of it. And that's not even talking about all the other problems that we have, the derivatives and everything else.
Oh, massive trillions.
Yeah. I mean, the numbers are staggering, not alone.
It's a good word.
So
staggering. Enormous.
They're just, it should frighten the heck out of you to know that the system can't remain without issues going forward. I mean, come on. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this stuff out. It just takes a little common sense. And the thing of it is, what allows us to think that it can't be changed and not look at the answers that come from the various institutions that we have. I mean, are you kidding me? Those are your best answers to our problems?
Well, they might not be the best, but sometimes, as someone once said, politics is not necessarily the, you know, what, you know, doing the best thing. Sometimes it's just doing the art of what's possible. And with our campaign finance system and how it's rigged, don't expect any significant changes for the better, ladies and gentlemen.
Another change, another break. We'll be right back. Please stay with us. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of other client businesses. Final segment. You know where to reach her. 1-800-375-4188. Politics makes strange bedfellows, right? Well, word in Washington has it that Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia is losing patience with his fellow Senate Democrats over their signature climate law. And the feeling is said to be mutual. Manchin has spent weeks escalating his attacks on President Biden in the implementation of the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. That's the sweeping bill that Manchin actually helped write in a negotiated deal that literally stunned Washington last summer. Last week, Manchin threatened to join Republicans in voting to repeal the law, as the House GOP is demanding in its legislation for raising the country's $31.4 trillion debt limit. Manchin caught his party colleagues off guard, even if such a repeal would be a real long shot. Now, the threat came just as Biden was launching his reelection campaign that rests heavily on that legislation's climate and health care provisions. Senator Angus King is the independent from Maine and a close colleague of Manchin's on the Senate Energy Committee, said this of Manchin's comments. It surprises me that he wants to repeal it. I think it's one of his greatest accomplishments. Well, the Inflation Reduction Act, IRA for short, is far less of a political bright spot for Joe Manchin, whose potential reelection hopes are clouded by growing disapproval ratings in his state, partly driven by his support for the law, ironically. Well, Manchin has yet to announce whether he's running again, but a formidable challenger has entered that race just last week, GOP Governor Jim Justice. Manchin's fellow Democrats understand that his reelection could in fact determine whether they retain their slim 51-seat Senate majority in 2024. They've also grown weary of his attacks against their marquee climate law, even if they've come to expect it, and know that there's little they can do to change his mind or his ways. And his votes against Democratic policies and Biden nominees have already complicated the agenda, or at least his party's agenda, in the tight Senate. Some of his fellow D's fear that his criticisms will do real damage by confusing the public about one of the law's most debated provisions, its $7,500 tax credit for electric vehicles. He's accused the Treasury Department of violating the law by flouting strict provisions he wrote designed to force electric vehicles to be made in the U.S. with American-made parts. Lobbyist Liam Donovan, who previously worked for the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, observed this. When you're Joe Manchin, it never hurts to be seen butting heads with the administration. But I think this is genuine umbrage over the fact congressional intent seems pretty clear, even if the statutory construction left room for Treasury to maneuver. And given that he would not have been on board for the bill at all had this been the understanding, it reads to him as a personal betrayal. Well, the D's counter that the administration has been doing its best to balance the Inflation Act's competing goals of lowering the cost of EVs while promoting U.S. manufacturing and jobs. Now, Manchin recently has also joined the R's in supporting resolutions they've brought up for a vote disapproving of the administration's energy and environmental policies. Last Wednesday, in fact, he was the only Democrat to vote with Republicans in overturning an EPA regulation on emissions from heavy-duty trucks, which are big in his home state. Manchin also co-sponsored a Republican resolution to undo Biden's suspension of solar power tariffs, which could actually come up for a vote on Friday this week. And Manchin, who chairs the Senate Energy Committee, has also expressed desire with the administration by torpedoing a bunch of Biden energy nominees. Now, the White House has supported fossil fuel projects that Manchin has backed, and that's angered environmentalists. You can't please anybody. I mean, the Willow Oil and Alaska Natural Gas projects, the Mountain Valley Pipeline that would deliver natural gas produced in West Virginia. The inflation reduction law includes $369 billion in incentives for clean energy and EVs, as well as health measures, such as a cap on insulin costs for Medicare recipients. GOP lawmakers who unanimously opposed the law argue that it spends too much money and say its twin goals of quickly weaning the U.S. economy off fossil fuels while reducing reliance on China for clean energy technologies are just incoherent. But other D's say the administration is carrying out the law that Congress passed. Simple as that. Just another example of politics making strange bedfellows. Right now, Manchin and his fellow D's are sleeping in separate bedrooms. Whether they'll be able to make the peace necessary for them to make political love again, well, remains to be seen. Hey, our latest American Survival newsletter is running a tad late this week. We'll hit the street sometime after today's program. My apologies for that. It features Doug Nolan's weekly Credit Bubble Bulletin blog and Puff Carrier's Wendy Wilson's Food for Thought column on GMO food reactions. Plus, in addition to Melody's financial markets recap, I have an article on the First Republic bank failure and fallout. Now, as the good old Wicked Witch of the West orders her minions toward the end of Wizard of Oz, seize them! And seize them they did. San Francisco bank First Republic was taken over by the FDIC over the weekend and was sold to too big to fail J.P. Morgan Chase in the pre-dawn hours of yesterday. All in a day's work, right? Well, it was the third bank failure in 2 months and the second largest in the nation's history. And the one answered question we wrestle with right now is there a systemic banking crisis or not? So here's what's going on. J.P. Morgan, the country's largest bank, will assume all of First Republic's $92 billion in deposits, including the ones that weren't insured. The FDIC didn't even need to invoke its so-called systemic risk exception to insure them, as it did with Silicon Valley and Signature Banks. Members of Congress who run the banking committees in both houses generally praised the federal takeover of First Republic and called its sale to JPM an example of a successful public-private collaboration. Representative Maxine Waters of California and the top Democrat in the House Financial Services Committee said, "This prompt and cost-effective sale of the bank protects depositors, limits contagion, and ensures that no cost is borne to our nation's taxpayers." Well, we will see, won't we? Still, such effusive praise should raise our eyebrows, given the nearly $17 million in campaign contributions the commercial banking industry gave to members of Congress in 2022, that figure according to OpenSecrets.org. As Pam and Russ Martins of Wall Street on Parade remind us, it shouldn't be lost, but apparently it has been on the regulators that approved the sale and their fans in the Capitol, that J.P. Morgan is a five-time felon, with the same CEO, Jamie Dimon, at its helm during that period. But I guess I digress. Right now we're being told that JPM's acquisition cost is much lower than expected. But because there's a change of ownership, JPM will have to mark First Republic's book of loans at market value and take the losses on those loans on its own books. Felix Salmon of Axios reports that those losses will be shared with the FDIC, though, at a cost of about $13 billion to its insurance fund, but far less than the $30-plus billion the market had been expecting. Now, under the Dodd-Frank Act of 2010, the FDIC is required to fund its deposit insurance fund at a certain percentage of all insured deposits at eligible U.S. banks. According to the FDIC, as of 12/31/2022, the agency held $128.2 billion in its DIF, based on total insured deposits of $10.068 trillion. It's a reserved ratio of 1.27%. As was first speculated several weeks ago, First Republic shareholders and bondholders, just like those of Silicon Valley, will likely be wiped out and receive just cents on the dollar. And for now, First Republic's executives are employees of J.P. Morgan, but many of them, I believe, will surely leave for greener pastures where the prospect of big-time bonuses, among other things, will grace their pocketbooks again. Bank regulators have made it clear since the Great Recession that it's never their preference to allow too-big-to-fail banks like JPM to grow by acquisition. But by selling First Republic to them, the federal government seems to be suggesting that there is a growing banking crisis that outweighs those concerns. The California Department of Financial Protection and Innovation, which was First Republic's primary state regulator, said the bank had become unsafe or unsound. Now, any deal that gets announced at 4:30 on a Monday morning is going to be a tad messy. Salmon says this transaction is clearly designed to try to mop up the mess rather than to create more of it. Axios's Emily Pack notes that state and federal bank regulators were well aware of the problems at both Silicon Valley and Signature banks when they failed in March, but weren't able to prevent a major blow up anyway. The same could be happening right now. Three separate autopsies on bank failures released last Friday by regulators each highlighted how bank supervisors fell short in their oversight. The Fed itself released a 114-page report that blamed the collapse of SVB on the bank. It also faulted its own supervisors charged with overseeing it, not to mention some federal regulations that were watered down during the Trump administration. The FDIC published its internal review of its own handling of the supervision of Signature Bank. For its part, the FDIC emphasized certain weaknesses in its oversight, blaming part of the problem on a major understaffing problem. AO, Government Accountability Office, released a report that noted one thing the two bank failures had in common. Turns out that in both cases, regulators saw the risk but weren't able to get the banks to alleviate them. As a whole, Peck says, all three reports essentially call into question the regulators' ability to regulate. She reports that FDIC supervisors appear to have gotten the runaround from Signature Bank officials who had little interest in addressing risks. The FDIC report says the agency could have been more forceful in its supervision, you think? Well, red flags flash before regulators with the risks of Signature's roughly 90% of uninsured deposit. That's unusually high. But the FDIC report says there was little recognition by the bank senior management that risk was even an issue, much less there being a contingency plan in place to handle the fleeing customer deposits. And flee they did, big time. In fact, on Friday, March 10th, the bank lost 20% of its deposits in just a couple of hours. Yet the report noted that Signature's president rejected examiners' concern that same day, not long before regulators took over the bank. The Fed report on the supervision of Silicon Valley suggests that even its own staff didn't fully understand the risk the bank was taking on. And even when those risks were revealed, they weren't dealt with. A senior fellow at Brookings, Aaron Klein, observed, it seems like the Fed is still not adequately appreciating how poorly it's doing its job as bank regulator. Well, now the FDIC and Fed want to tighten regulations. The Fed says it's considering stricter rule on banks. It's a process that could take years, especially if they're going to need congressional approval. CNBC's Jeff Cox's interest on Capitol Hill to amend Dodd-Frank to tighten the reins appears to have waned after an initial rush in the wake of the Silicon Valley and Signature failures. You know, I have a go-to Caesar salad recipe that I've used for years called Caesar and Pleaser. Well, Caesum and Sellum is one way to look at what happened yesterday with First Republic. But perhaps the more apropos way of seeing it is season and appeasum. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return for a solo show on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow. Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks as always to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there and have a great evening. Bye-bye. I have a friend.